Hello and welcome. You are listening to Moodily Matters, the podcast that recognizes that your mood matters. Every episode, we talk to a range of amazing guests with experience in some of the top organizations in the world, discussing work life at the crossroads of mood, well-being, and performance. Together, we aim to create better workplaces, one mood at a time. Let's get started with your host, Moodily founder, Erica First.
Hello and welcome. My name is Erica First, and I'm your host of Moodily Matters. My guest today is Soapbox founder Nevia Shanta, who has flipped the whole concept of work-life balance around into something she calls whole life living. We talk about what that is, how you can achieve it, and why it's more important than just trying to stay balanced. And now, on to the episode.
Hi, Nevia. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So why don't we get started by you introducing yourself to the listeners?
Awesome. So I am Nevia Shanta. I'm currently living in Seattle, Washington. I did a pandemic move. It was the best decision ever. I am the founder and CEO of a company called Soapbox Project, and we make it easy for busy people like you to take action on climate change. So I know that there are billions of you out there that care about sustainability and everything's really overwhelming. So we cut through that overwhelm with bite-sized newsletters and a really fun community focused on local action and how you transform your learnings into meaningful change. So that's a little bit about me. And when I'm not doing all the climate community building stuff, I am reading, baking sourdough, and generally trying to keep my plants alive, which currently is not going super well.
But it's the intention, though.
I hope it will turn into serious action. Otherwise, I'm all talk.
But I love what your company does, because I think there are so many people who want to help and are just overwhelmed with what can I do. And so that's really great that you provide simple, actionable things that can make a difference. Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey and how you ended up where you are?
So I used to work at Accenture, and for those of you who don't know what that is, it is a ginormous 500,000 employee tech consulting firm with offices basically everywhere around the world. So I was working there, making a pretty decent salary, living in San Francisco, and I didn't really feel that my job was super meaningful, and it was also taking up a lot of time away from the things that I wanted to do. Not just sustainability related stuff, because at the time I wasn't even sure what I wanted to do, but even just my own physical and mental health and those kinds of things. And so during the years that I was at Accenture, I just kept realizing that I wanted to do something more. And at the time I didn't know it would be a full career shift. I just honestly, maybe an hour a week, wanted to do something more meaningful. And the desire kind of came from, I was living in San Francisco at the time, and there's a main street, Market Street, that connects the whole city. And on the left side of the street, there was just complete devastation and sadness and, you know, needles on the ground and feces. And if you've been to San Francisco recently, you might know what I'm talking about. It's horrible. And then on the right side of the street, where I was walking or biking or busing to work, where I was working, it was all of these high-rise apartment buildings and skyscrapers and people with way more resources than they needed. So that was my life for like 2 to 3 years. And it just felt deeply unsettling that I was part of this and not really doing anything to bridge this gap. So my journey before starting Soapbox was understanding, what can I do? How can I do it? And again, it was so overwhelming. It took me like the full 3 years to realize, how can I, as a working professional, do something that's not my job? How can I set boundaries with my job, which is supposed to be just a paycheck? How can I learn new skills that I care about and not just my employer cares about? So yeah, I spent those years doing pretty fun projects sometimes, working at different tech companies. One highlight was working with the Golden State Warriors. That was awesome. But really just the thing that was missing was the purpose and figuring out how to feel like me. So now here I am and I feel great.
That's awesome. And so you started this company, and what do you think, what's your personal and professional mission? Like how have you infused those into what you're doing?
I feel that those two are pretty much the same thing, because Soapbox was born out of this desire as a working professional to change the world, but actually like change the world in some meaningful sense of the phrase. So how do I actually look outside my life into my community? And so I think I realized this whole concept of personal and professional mission in 2018. You might have heard there was California's most devastating fire, most destructive fire happened in 2018 in a town called Paradise, which was only 3 hours north of where I was working at Accenture. And also it's the town where my fiance is from. So his house, his family's house, all of their relatives' houses burned to the ground. The first 2 days were really terrifying because we couldn't hear. We just didn't know what was going on. And 3 hours south of that, everyone was just going about business as usual. And then the following week, once the debris had kind of cleared and people knew what was going on, I was still very, very junior in my career, but I wanted to do something. And when I reached out to a bunch of people at Accenture, like, hey, what can we do? They were like, oh, good job. Just donate to Red Cross. That didn't sit right with me. So I just made up this proposal, sent it to a bunch of executives, and because of serendipity and them being in the same room at the same time, they were like, okay, yeah, you can have all this money and a team and go help out. So that day when that happened, I realized that every single person has the power to do something way more meaningful than they thought was possible. So I think if I had to summarize what I'm trying to do in my personal life and my professional life, it's, for me, it's as simple as I believe that every single human being on earth deserves to have a whole and happy life. I don't think it's about solving climate change or stopping ecological destruction. I mean, I think those are like major, major problems, but I think it's just like, how can we all help each other live whole lives? And I know that's like kind of a cliche thing to say, but when I realized that I have the power to contribute to that, something really clicked for me.
And so this kind of feeds into what we're going to be talking about in a minute. But to get started with that, what does well-being mean to you? Like, what does whole mean?
For me, it's having a community of people that I can depend on. And of course, we've all seen in COVID that's so important. We've seen how much loneliness has increased. We've seen all the stuff. So I think for me, it comes down to community and a strong support system. It comes down to your physical well-being and health. So that is like exercising, eating healthy, having the actual resources in your environment to do those things. Some people are not able to have those things. Having a sense of mental well-being. I know the conversation on mental health is huge. And I also think that it's not just like meditating 5 times a day or whatever the thing is, but each person has to figure out what does mental health and well-being look like. And like another key part of it for me is purpose. I think that there's also a big conversation around spiritual well-being and how spirituality contributes to your overall sense of well-being. And I'm still figuring out what that looks like for me, but I think that finding a purpose beyond myself and understanding my role in the world and what I can do has probably been the biggest driver of everything that I just said, because I realize now that I have this business and I have this mission because I know that I am needed and that there is a point of my existence and that I can help connect people to build a better world. I'm more motivated to do all those other things. I'm more motivated to keep a support system. I'm more motivated to, you know, do my physical health stuff because I can't burn out. If I burn out, then I'm not going to be doing this work anymore. So I think the big overarching thing for me has been purpose and figuring out all those other things in tandem. So it's definitely a journey.
No, it's such an incredible answer. And it's interesting because, you know, I ask this to everybody and everyone has a different one. So it's really interesting to see, as you said, it's very personal and it's very subjective. But I love the idea of, first of all, understanding that there's different facets to well-being. And they say there's anywhere from 7 to 12 inputs that we have, from financial to physical to mental to social. And I love the idea of being motivated by being part of something. And there's also a sense of responsibility in that, you know, that I think is really refreshing, that we don't hear a lot. So that said, let's segue into what we'll be talking about today, which is you're going to be sharing with us the importance of work-life balance. And tell me what you mean by work-life balance.
So I have been a little sneaky with choosing this topic on purpose, because I actually think that with work-life balance, we are often asking the wrong question. And the question is, how do we have better work-life balance? But I think the question can be, how do we live lives that encourage us to be more whole? Because I have a deep problem with the fact that we are expected to be two different people. Like, we're expected to be this one corporate machine type of person that cares only about deadlines and deliverables and money and profit. And then we can get home at 5 p.m. or whenever our job ends, and then life begins. So I wanted to talk about this because I think that living a whole life is really hard in the world that we live in. And so the more I can encourage people to think critically about this concept of work-life balance and really understand beyond that, how do you set boundaries around yourself? And, you know, we just talked about well-being. How do you understand what well-being means for you? And then in this environment, in this work environment that expects so many things out of you, how can you still perform and deliver the things that you're supposed to deliver while keeping yourself whole? And I fully believe that this is way more possible in certain work environments than others, which is why I think that this conversation on work-life balance, a lot of it is geared towards the employee. It's like, what can we do as employees to, you know, set boundaries? I think that's really important, and I do want to talk about it. And we shouldn't have to fight so hard to maintain a balanced life. So all that said, yeah, I think that if I had to define my ideal world of work-life balance, it is helping people find purpose in their work and making that a facet of their overall lives instead of something that is like the driver of your life.
So going back to using this as a skill, and we're not going to, I guess, let's not talk about work-life balance, but let's talk about whole life living. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm totally fine using the word too, like whatever gets people to pay attention.
No, I like the idea of whole life living, because work-life balance is, you're right, it does compartmentalize the two things. And we are not two people. We are the same. You know, we show up, we bring to the office our concerns from home, and we bring our problems from work at home. So we are the same entity all the time. So what are some of the skills, since you are the queen of giving us easy, like, here's how you can do it. What are some of the skills we can do to move towards this concept of whole life living?
I think there's three things that come to mind. And the first for me is value setting. The second is boundary setting. And the third is time management. And that third thing is actually way more deep than I ever thought it was. So I'll go in that order because I think it's easiest that way. Brené Brown, to me, is the queen of how do you live a whole life. And so everything that I'm saying is paraphrased from her work. But her exercise on values has really changed my life because it's so simple. And one of the things that she talks about is how everyone in the workplace or in life talks about values, but you never are taught how to distill those values into behaviors and skills.
Right.
When she said that, I was like, wow, you're right. Like, I think my values are generosity and compassion and having fun and being a good friend. And I don't know what, like, if you had asked me right now, what do your values actually mean to you? I would be like, I don't know, having a good life and helping people maybe. So I sat down with this values exercise that she said, which the most important part of it is you can only pick two values. And the reason that you can pick two values is because values should be used as a filter for your decisions. And that to me was huge, especially with the conversation of work-life balance, whole life living, just managing working and living at the same time. That it's hard to make decisions. It is really hard to make decisions, whether it's, you know, do you go above and beyond at your job, or even like a much simpler product level decision, is it's not always easy. And so when you decide from a place of your values, so for example, one of the values for both me and my soapbox community is joy. And then the question that came next is like, okay, what behaviors does joy entail? And one of them is like celebrating out loud the accomplishments of yourself and others. And so that turned into more of a practice where now every day I'm like looking at actively looking for those things in the context that I'm in. And so when you have that framework throughout your life, it's really easy to filter out what matters and what doesn't. And so for using this joy example, this year has been hard because I have had to navigate friendships that I kind of not took for granted. But, you know, sometimes you have friends that you've been friends with for a really long period of time and you don't intentionally question any of that. Because I've been living with this values-driven framework, it's kind of made me understand which people I actually value. Like, is this friend celebrating my accomplishments and in reverse, like sharing with me what's lighting her up? And the answer has been no. And so just having this framework that I can use for my own life, like courage, joy, distilling those into behaviors, making decisions, that's been like a key skill that I never knew that values setting was any sort of skill. So that's one. The second one is boundaries. This is the hardest one for me, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I'm still working on it. But boundaries.
It's with the plants.
Yeah, exactly. It is with the plants. Boundaries is just a list of what's okay and what's not okay. So at least starting there, I think before I had heard that sentence, that definition, I never even made that list. So I would feel annoyed a lot, and then I wouldn't know why I was annoyed, but at least having a list of what's okay, what's not okay. So maybe what's not okay is people showing up 10 minutes late to a Zoom event for our community, but I might have never said, like, it's not clear to the other person. You can either drop in anytime or you have to be on time at the hour. So I'm just learning, like, boundaries, expanding the definition of boundaries with what's okay, what's not okay, understanding that boundaries means energy and time and even money as a business owner and just like a human. I honestly, money is so important, but I just like cringe at all conversations pricing. But somebody told me the other day, like, price is a boundary. That is how you signal what's okay and what's not okay and have the right people enter your space. And so I'm thinking about that right now. I have no answers, but I'm thinking about it. The last piece is time management. But since I have way more to say on that, I'm just going to pause there and see if you have any other questions.
No, I'm just taking notes and ready to get into time management.
Okay. So I read this book called Rest and it changed my life. I mentioned this every time to any person that I can talk to about any well-being related subject. And the biggest premise of time management that I think we all need to think about, and we all being the people that are privileged enough to think about this, is decoupling time with productivity and creativity. because we have this idea that, you know, you have to work an 8-hour day. Some employers are getting better at this, where they're saying, you know, work as long as you need to get your tasks done. But I still, we just live in a culture, like an 8-hour workday culture. And in this book, Rest, the author, Alex Pang, basically pulled out a bunch of examples throughout history, throughout professions, different people that he considers to be creative. And he looked at all these different studies. And the study that kind of gave me the permission to think outside of this 8-hour workday paradigm is they basically mapped out a whole bunch of people's productivity and saw that after the 5-hour mark, maybe it was like between 4.5 and 5.5 hours. Yep. After that mark, your productivity actually diminishes.
Yeah.
So working longer actually does not work. And so I think we all have this intuition every day when we're like at that 3 p.m. slump and it's like, why am I still working? And you stare at your screen and nothing's happening. But I think for me, having the scientific permission to uncouple time spent with amount of work done or creative work done was really big. So the biggest skill for me with this time management piece has actually been, it like goes into the whole boundary setting conversation. So since February 2022, so it's been about what, like 8 months now, I have been practicing this new approach of time management where instead of getting really granular about the tasks that I want to do and stuff, I am following what the author of Rest said, which is 3 90-minute work chunks throughout the day, and that's it. So you do your 90 minutes, you take at least a half an hour rest, and then you do your 90 minutes and repeat. So very counterintuitively for me, this year has been the most productive and creative I've ever been. And I think it's because a lot of us perform busyness and we like think we're working really long hours and doing a lot. But oftentimes, I'm going to speak for myself. Oftentimes, we're on Twitter like half working and checking our emails and all of this stuff. So having this like very strict period of just locking down all distractions, which is a common time management technique. But I think for me, the 90 minute thing, I was like, okay, come on, Navi, you can do anything. Are you telling me you can't check social media for 90 minutes? That was just such an achievable time frame. So yeah, following that has changed my life. It's helped me condense my work into more meaningful chunks, do more, be a better thinker. And then back to the whole life living thing, like outside of those 4.5 to 5 hours per day, I have all of this time to read, to talk to my friends, to check in with people, to be a better community builder. So yeah, it's been amazing.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. There's two things I wanted to add to that is that you need, in order to actually produce and be productive and be creative, you need to kind of get into a flow state. And, if you're checking, so every time you're interrupted, either from someone outside who's come up and decided to bother you or asking you a question or your phone, or, you know, you read something, it takes your brain 15 to 20 minutes to get back into that spot. So, you know, if you give yourself 90 minutes of literally do not distract me, then you can do amazing things. But if you're in a 2 hours and you've spent 5 minutes here and you've asked a question to someone else, your brain never actually gets into that state where you're able to do your best work. And that's one of the things, it came up from one of the podcasts that I did recently. It was a piece of advice to employees also for themselves, but you know, don't bother other people when they're working, which is, you know, like we're always thinking like, oh, I feel like calling my, you know, in the office, like, oh, let me go call Jane and see what she's up to. But like if Jane's in the middle of one of her flow things, you're actually doing tremendous damage to her productivity. Mm-hmm. What do you think employers can do to enable, help people achieve this whole living?
That is a great question because of course I'm just telling you the thing that I learned in this book, and I'm able to do it because I set my own schedule. That is not the case for everyone. And it's still hard for me. Like, I'm like, does meetings count as work? Does this podcast count as work? I'm probably not going to count it because I'm having too much fun. but yeah, so I think it really is up to employers to create these conditions. And I really think it goes back to employers understanding that they're people too. Like, I just, it's so troublesome to see how different people perceive themselves in a work setting. You would never talk that way sometimes in your personal life. You would never think of humans the same way. And so I think the first thing is, as an employer, do you have the intention to make this change? Do you actually care about your employees? Do you just, like, think of yourself as a human and figure out if this is something that you want to do? Because a lot of the conversations that I'm seeing about these, you know, 4-day work weeks and stuff, they all come from a lens of you're going to have a more productive workforce and then you can make more money, which is great for you. Like, congratulations. But I don't think that is, I think when you lead with that motivation, you're going to be stressed about, okay, is this working? Is this working? Are we right. making more money? Versus, okay, I know I want to do this. I know I want to be a leader that encourages other people to be whole humans and feel that way myself. So that might sound really obvious, but I've seen a lot of people just not have that intention in the first place. The second thing is education. So I have had to seek a lot of this out on my own. I am lucky that I am a really fast reader and I love reading. So I've read like 100+ books this year, which is why I'm able to, so I'm able to learn all of these random skills. I mean, at the time they felt random. I was like, okay, whatever. What's this thing about rest? But I would have not learned about that if I was at my old job and had to set my, like, had to set my schedule around other people's meeting times and couldn't carve it out. And so I think there has to be some degree of education from employers on what healthy lives are, because we live in a world where work is so tangled up with life. Like, I think it's kind of weird that I'm saying, oh, your employer should educate you on health and well-being. But unfortunately for a lot of people, maybe fortunately for some, work is a place where you spend a majority of your life. And so a lot of education has to come from there. I think the third and maybe most important thing, though, is setting up those structures. So I've seen no meeting Wednesdays for certain companies. I've seen 4-hour work, 4-day work weeks, 3-day weekends. All of those structures are, make it such that we're not buying into that culture of like, okay, I guess I do have to work a 8-hour day and I have to show my little online green bubble. Cause as I mentioned, I really think so many of us are performing busyness. I know so many friends that don't want to go on a walk during the day because they're like, what if someone emails me or calls me or like, I need to be online. That's just not true. And it's the employer's responsibility to make it clear that's either not true or just be very clear in what is expected at work. So if you are the type of employer that's saying like, all I care about is getting your work done, being really clear that, yeah, you can work 4 hours a day if you finish this list of tasks or whatever. So I think the clarity piece is really, really important. And employers have to educate themselves on the structures and the psychology. And I think the thing that really sets apart employers and employees as a manager, as a executive, it is up to you to go pursue those other learnings so that you can come back and implement those structures. And thankfully, there's so many experts that are writing about this and practicing this. And there are some brave companies that are testing out shorter work days and work weeks. And so I think that's a great trend.
Well, so a couple of things. First, on the education bit, I once spoke to a company who shall remain nameless for obvious reasons, that when we were talking about bringing, a holistic learning about well-being food, exercise, communication skills, like all different types of things, they were very concerned about opening Pandora's box because they were like, if suddenly people are happy, aren't they not going to want to stay here anymore? You know? And I was like, or we teach people how to be happy. And as a consequence, they're actually happier to be here. Which, you know, to me, the equation, I actually did in a paper I worked on, the equation between productivity and all this stuff. And it comes through, it must pass through self-efficacy, which is a sense of self-esteem. Mm. So unless you are building people's self-esteem in their own abilities to live their lives, you are not developing more productive employees. The more you beat them down and make them feel powerless or like they're dependent on you for survival, the less productive, creative, and performing they're going to be. It's, you know, it's basic science at this point. But one of the things when I was running a team that I used to do, I was not obsessed with times. I was obsessed with outcomes and outputs. I had very high standards for the quality of work that I expected, but when it got done, you know, if you could do it in an hour and it was great, then, you know, why would I ever do that? And freeing up people's time, but also letting them work the way they wanted to.
Yes.
And making them responsible for the quality of the work as opposed to the quantity of the work meant that they were actually putting in more time, doing more research, doing more, you know, investigating, looking at other things, looking at competitive to make sure that it was the best it could be. So
yeah,
ultimately it was, you know, they were working more, but happier. They were happy while they were working because it was fulfilling their sense of satisfaction.
Yeah. And it sounds like they were working more creatively too, going out of their way to do research and think more critically about what they're doing. And that really resonates in what you said about self-efficacy also, because this narrative of millennials don't want to work and people don't want to work, we all know that's not true. Humans like to feel productive. We like to have responsibility.
We are programmed to be productive.
Yeah. And so anyone that says that is either knows they're wrong or just is living on a different plane of existence. And
well,
that's just
lazy.
Yeah, it's just the most bizarre narrative that I have heard that people are getting behind, because we all want to feel like we're good people moving things in the right direction. And it can be that simple. And it, like, when you give people the agency to work on their own times and you show people an example of what that could look like, it sounds like what you did with your team is set clear expectations of what that looks like, because this is new to a lot of us. Like, many of us are like, okay, 8 hours at work and that's it. So if you're asking something different, or if you're saying it doesn't have to be 8 hours, it can be something else, you have to provide an alternative vision as a manager, as an employer. And it sounds like what you did is a really good example of showing people, first of all, educating people on some of those things and then setting up those structures. So that was really cool to hear about.
Thank you. I wasn't fishing for compliments, but thank you. Okay. So do you think, no, I'm going to kill that question because it's obviously we've answered it. What happens when we don't have this whole life, like, what, how does it show up? And we've talked a little bit about it, but I just want to explicitly ask the question.
In my life personally, it just, I felt that every day was pointless, and that's a horrible way to feel. And I'm sure many people can relate to this feeling, because if our brains, back to your thing about employers being worried about happy employees, the reason that's ridiculous is if you're showing up to work every day, dragging your feet, and like 80% of your brain is like, I hate this job, that's not good. Actually, I have a story. I don't tell this very often anymore, but it was my first full, not even first full year. It was like 4 months into my career at Accenture. Hated my job because managers that I was working with were just, I just felt treated like a robot with no purpose, did not feel like I had a whole life. I recently graduated at the time too. So nobody, nobody else had told me, okay, Nivi, you need to set up a structure to exercise and to take care of yourself before doing your whole work thing. So I had zero concept of what work-life balance even is. The only concept I had is that you have to work really hard and succeed. You know, that every new employee, I don't know if that's changed the last couple of years, but the concept of like, you have to spend your first 2 years grinding and it'll pay off. So I was in that mindset, hated my job. One day I was like, I would do anything to not go to work. And I would even want to get hit by a car to not go to work. So I was like, walking, did my horrible work day, hated it, thought I wanted to get hit by a car, walked back, and it happened. Seriously happened. And my, like, this is so messed up, but obviously once I learned that I wasn't going to die, it was a really scary experience. I'm making a little bit light of it, but it was a really scary experience. I was in the ambulance. After that whole chaos calmed down a little and I figured out that everything was fine and I would have a few minor fractures, but things would be okay. I was like, how messed up is it that one of my first thoughts is that I don't have to go to work tomorrow?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So to answer your question of what happens when we're not whole employees, it just, what is the point of an earth where we're all walking around being miserable and then not having anything to give to other, to our family, to our friends, to our society? Like if I think that if every single person just took 1 minute to think about what matters to them, it would be very obvious why this question is so important. That's actually something that I use as a exercise in some of the events that we host at Soapbox, is draw what matters to you. There, the similarities of people's images are striking. There's trees, there's lots of people condensed, there's little hearts. Nobody's drawing about work, but people can feel fulfilled in jobs. I fully believe that. If people hate their jobs, they might want to get hit by cars and it might happen.
That's so terrible.
I know, it was really terrible. And because of how terrible I felt about my job, it wasn't even for me, like getting hit by a car wasn't even like, I was like, okay, this is good. I can go on medical leave and not have to work, which is just like severely a messed up example of like that should not be anyone's thought.
The depths it can go to.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Okay, well, Nivi, thank you so much for being here. How can people learn more about you and your Soapbox project? Where can they find you?
So, as I alluded to, I am obnoxiously on the internet, which is why I need my 90-minute distraction-free chunks. So soapboxproject.org is our website. We are also everywhere. My new thing has been TikTok, where I try to make people laugh with TikToks at Soapbox Project. You can tell me if that's successful or not. And then separately, I write about community building and well-being, all of these topics that we talked about, on my personal site at niviachanta.com, and I am at niviachanta all over the internet. So basically, if you search for either Soapbox Project or niviachanta, you will guaranteed find me in all the corners of the internet.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your incredible spirit and advice with us today.
Thank you. I hope that everyone listening has a really wonderful rest of their day. Do something that makes you happy, even if you're trapped in a dead-end job, like get some ice cream. I don't know, just start small.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Moodily Matters. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Moodily Matters.